Welcome in to the Whole Hog Podcast. A little bit different name there. Whole Hog Podcast instead of the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America. As we enter the summer months, it's a time to transition, Scotty. It's a time to where we go from basketball, and then football hits a lot of people's minds. So we're going to slightly transition, not to just talking about football, and we're not going to neglect our basketball roots here, but we are going to start transitioning, talking about some other stuff. So Scotty and I, we're the host of the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America, which will be back whenever basketball season comes back around. And, you know, hopefully there will be seasons so we can start splitting up these podcasts again. But for right now, we're going to join them all together. So I'm Seth Campbell, joined alongside Scotty Bordelon. And we've got a stacked show for you today since we are including everything. We got football. Sam Pittman talked to the media this week. And there's multiple roster notables that Scotty went through and picked out, as well as TJ Hammonds is in the news again, which, shocker, right? And then some updates on Cottrell Wallace. We've got former Arkansas Razorback Jalen Barford is going to join Scotty and I as well. We talked to him about some painful memories, including the North Carolina game in the NCAA tournament, but also some good memories that he has as well and what he's up to right now. And then we also have some basketball stories about Pat Ackerman and Chris Crutchfield that we want to get to. So, Scotty, it has been an interesting few weeks, but hey, I'm excited to talk about some football.
Yeah, for sure. And I just want to give you a little peek behind the curtain today. So before we started recording, we figured out that only one of our microphones works. And we're sitting on a couch in the office, the NWADG office, and we only have one mic. And so if there's any awkward silences after Seth's finishes talking, and when I get done talking, that's because we're passing the microphone back and forth and trying to pass the mic under the headphones that Seth's wearing so the cords don't get tangled.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting show, to say the least. I think that one of the things that surprised me the most, Scotty, was when I walked into the room where we normally record the podcast and everything was gone. That was also a shock. So we had to get a few microphones in, and we tried a few and they weren't working. So we are down to one. We've got a suite set up here at the NWADG office, and they're making it even better. But for right now, we are in a transition period, which also leads me to say, before I forget, that during this transition period, as we transition not only into a new space for us, but also into more sports, that we are going to take the week off next week so that we don't have to sit here and awkwardly pass the mic between each other. We can wait for the space to get set up.
Yeah, that'll be nice. It was a little odd. I know you told me you walked into the podcast room. I mean, we've been doing the podcast in that same room since last football season started. And yeah, Seth was kind of taken aback that he just walked into the podcast room, and apparently it's going to be used for HR now, right? So a little bit of an adjustment, but we found a nice comfy spot on the couch. We're going to try to bring the pod to you today.
Hey, through thick or thin, the pod must go on. All right, Scotty, we're going to start it out talking about what Sam Pittman said this week. There were some interesting highlights, but a few. I'm going to be a very bad journalist here. I'm only supposed to ask you one question at a time, but I'm going to ask you multiple questions here so that way we don't have to pass the microphone back and forth. A few roster notables, and then also, you know, what Sam Pittman said. What did you see from that press conference? Really the first time that we've heard from the head hog, A, in a while, and B, the first time that we've heard from him since the protests have started happening around the country and up here in Northwest Arkansas.
Yeah, so, it has been a while. I think Tom wrote in his story, it's been several weeks since we've talked to Sam Pittman. Gosh, I don't even remember the last time we did. So it was good to hear from him again and just kind of get kind of football back in our lives. Obviously, voluntary on-campus workouts are going to begin on Monday. That's pretty exciting. And it was really evident listening to Sam Pittman talk that he's super excited to get the kids back. And he said, I'm a coach. And when there's no one to coach, it's hard for him to coach. And that's probably about as simply as you can put it. He's really excited to get him back. He's not going to be him and the assistant coaches are not going to be able to be in those workouts, like in the weight rooms, wherever they're at. They're not going to be able to be in there with those guys, but the strength and conditioning coaches will be. So Pittman, the assistant coaches, they're going to continue those Zooms that they've been doing since the shutdown. And the assistants and Sam Pittman are going to really have to rely on the strength coaches for feedback. And when those kids get back, you know, they're going to start slow. Like they said, obviously it doesn't make sense for them to just start going full bore, no pun intended, into those workouts. I mean, it's not smart for me, someone who hasn't worked out in a while, to just go into the fitness center at my apartment complex and just start getting after it.
Scotty, I couldn't tell you hadn't worked out in a while.
Yeah. So they're going to really rely on those strength coaches a lot for feedback to see where those guys are. And then, you know, just with everything going on in the country right now, with protests for George Floyd and, you know, just police brutality protests. There was one in Bentonville on Monday. There was one in Fayetteville on Tuesday at the Fayetteville Square. Sam Pittman, several players on the football team, and several members of his staff were at the protest. And Sam Pittman was asked about it on that Zoom call that we were on with him on Wednesday. And, you know, he talked about just how powerful it was. He was glad he had a chance to go down there. He asked the players, you know, if you're comfortable going, if you want to go down there, the only thing that we really ask of you is to stay safe and, you know, maybe get out of there, you know, when the sun starts to set, because that's when, you know, he was worried that things could maybe take a little bit of a turn after the sun went down. So he was looking out for their safety there. He just said he was very honored to be a part of it. Glad he could go down there. And wanted to be, he felt in his heart that it was the right thing for him to do. He wanted to support his players' families, also his staff members, like, and their families too. So he went down there and felt like it was only right for him to go down there and feel like he was, to feel like he could be something that felt like a solution.
Yeah, for sure. And that's also a very genuine response from a very genuine man that we've seen so far in our interactions with Sam Pittman, which haven't been very many because of COVID. And then also we've only talked to him a few times in person before the COVID-19 crisis pandemic. But his response to that is just so much different, Scotty, than what we saw down in Tallahassee with Mike Norvell. If you haven't seen it, Mike Norvell is getting some heat from some players after he told a reporter that he personalized text messages to every single football player on his staff and that he was able to reach out to them and they were having intentional conversations. And a football player responded on Twitter by saying that they indeed were not, that they were all just got the same generic text and that the football players wouldn't be working out until future notice, basically. So you can tell just the genuine reaction from Pittman that is a little different than what is happening down in Florida.
Yeah, so apparently, I mean, it's being reported as of Thursday morning that Mike Norvell met with the Florida State players. And I saw at least one tweet that was like, yeah, like we're all on the same. There was one player that basically said, yeah, we're all on the same page. Florida State football is moving forward. But I think there were some mixed reactions after the meeting. So, I mean, I guess we'll just kind of have to wait and see how that plays out. But I think Sam Pittman handled this whole situation with grace. And, you know, he said in his heart he wanted to go. I wanted to support our team in the protest. That's what he believed in. He said, you can tweet about stuff. You can do a lot of things. Like, you can take a picture to show someone just that you were there. But that's more of a self-promotion type deal. He didn't go down there to have his picture taken. Mm-hmm. You know, he didn't make it like a big publicity stunt, media stunt that he went down there. He just wanted to, I think it was a genuine reaction. I really do think that he had, like obviously his intentions were pure. He said he didn't go down there for any other reason. He didn't go down there for somebody to take his picture. He just wanted to support the players on his team and their families. And he thought the protest was, the people that were at the protest were awesome. Like there were thousands of people down there, common-minded people down there. He said he went by the Fayetteville Square on Wednesday morning, and it was like nothing had ever happened. Like it was nice to see. He said it was nice to see a peaceful protest. People of Fayetteville did a great job with that protest.
Yeah, for sure. All right, moving on, Scotty, you wrote a fantastic piece talking about the roster notables, and you were able to compare last year's roster for the football team with this year's roster. And I thought that it was really interesting just having those side by side, those facts, being able to see them. What were some of the things that stood out to you?
Yeah, so I just, you know, looking for things to do these days, and you kind of have to, I kind of figured a couple of weeks ago when we found out that football players and fall sports athletes were going to be able to come back to campus on June 8th, that, you know, a roster on the website might be updated. So I did a side-by-side comparison of the 2019 roster and the, I guess this is an early 2020 roster. So if you go to the story on our site, this roster includes just returning players and newcomers who enrolled during the spring semester, and it doesn't include, you know, all the incoming freshmen or newcomers who are going to report this summer. So this is still missing, I would say, probably 10 to 12 guys. Let me pull this up real quick. Yeah, so it's missing guys like Malik Hornsby, Ray Curry, Marcus Henderson, Jalen St. John, Xavier Kelly, who's a grad transfer coming from Clemson, Jashad Stewart. Some of those guys, like, they're not on this roster yet. But one of the things that was standing out to me was just the differential in height and weight year over year. And I guess we can just start at the top. The first thing that jumped out to me was KJ Jefferson. He's up 12 pounds from last year. So he is now, I feel like this is SEC quarterback. This is perfect SEC quarterback height and weight. So you can take some of those hits that you're going to obviously absorb during the course of a season. He's up to 6'3", 240 pounds. So he's up 12 pounds from last year. Koylan Jackson's up 4 pounds to 215. And another notable, just high up on the roster, because I've got it, it's in numerical order. Shamar Nash is up 14 pounds. I thought that really stood out. So he was at 190, he was at 6'3", 195 on the 2019 roster, but he's up 14 pounds and he's at 6'3", 209 now. And when I put this story up on the site, I got a comment about, why do you think, you know, what do you think the reasons were for Shamar Nash, you know, adding that weight? I'm like, I don't know why it would hurt, like, just to add some extra strength. It could obviously, you know, the added weight and the added strength can't hurt when it comes to trying to separate from defensive backs, because defensive backs, they want to be physical. They want to be really physical. They don't want to let you get any separation, especially off the line of scrimmage. So I think that added weight and that added strength is going to be a plus. And it's also going to help him with run blocking. I think that's an often overshadowed part of any wide receiver's game. Like, you got to be able to run block at some point. I think we saw, you know, Trey Knox and Treylon Burks, they kind of had their moments in run blocking last year. So we keep scrolling. Treylon Burks is up 8 pounds over since 2019. He's up to 6'3", 231. That's pretty solid. So that's pretty good to see. Jack Lindsey. Jack Lindsey's up 10 pounds to, let me see, where's, I lost him. Yeah, so Jack Lindsey's actually one of the guys on this roster notables. He actually changed numbers. Says he wore 18 last year. He'll be wearing 21 this year, according to the roster. He's up 10 pounds. He's at 6'2", 214. Zach Zemos was a guy that kind of surprised me on this, on the updated roster. He's up 16 pounds to 227. He's also at 6'4", so that's really good size for a linebacker. That's kind of the weight that you kind of want to see. Jonathan Marshall's up 10 pounds. You know, last year when we were talking to, I think it was Tremaine Carroll at Paradise Valley, you know, before the season, we get to talk to the strength coach and, you know, all the assistants before that golf tournament. And they said he's easily the strongest guy on the team. And so the strongest guy on the team has added 10 pounds. He's up to 309 now. A couple other surprises. Nick Fullwider, who we saw a lot last year in practice, he looks like a clone of Trey Flowers. But he's up 30 pounds to 6'7", 290. Linebacker McKinley Williams is up 34 pounds to 6'4", 235. Ricky Stromberg's up 32 pounds. We knew a little bit about that during the winter conditioning. You know, Sam Pittman talked about that a little bit. Zach Williams is good to see. He's up 12 pounds. He was a little bit thin last year as a true freshman, playing on the defensive line. So getting some bulk added to his frame is a positive. Shane Clennon's up 12 pounds. Ty Clary's up 13 to 298. Ryan Winkle added 12 pounds. He's at 297. Drew Vest is at 290 after gaining 12 pounds. And it's really interesting. You commented on this after I sent you and Matt the initial text edit file with all the like the height and weight differentials. So Myron Cunningham has grown an inch. He's now at 6'7", and he added 3 pounds. So he's 6'7", 293. Dalton Wagner added 3 pounds, so he's at a monstrous 6'9", 311. And Hudson Henry is at a really solid 6'5", 250. So those are just some of the, I say some of them. I feel like I rattled off every freaking name on the roster, but those are really some of the notables that stood out to me. And I guess you go to like the number changes. Davion Warren went from number 1 to 10. John David White went from 86 to 17. Like I said, Jack Lindsey, 18 to 21. And Jake Juracek, who's Arkansas AD, Hunter Juracek's son, he went from number 54 to 35. So those are just a few of the notables. Sorry if I rambled a little bit.
Just a few, huh? Yeah, some interesting stuff. That'll be linked in the description as well if you would like to go check that out on wholehogsports.com or just follow the link in the description. Yeah, Scotty mentioned, I like the guys that shrink as they get older. I think that's pretty funny. Also, there's a few mistakes maybe that get added, or, you know, some guys might flub a little bit on their height and weight. It's not as bad probably as the basketball roster, but some guys might, you know, lie a little bit when it gets on paper, and then the next year they don't lie, and all of a sudden they shrunk 2 inches, and you go, what happened here? Some other notable things about football before we move on is, well, TJ Hammonds is once again in the headlines. This time, he has been placed back on scholarship. Sam Pittman saying that he did everything that he needed to do to earn a scholarship. We have been saying TJ Hammonds' name since he stepped on campus about getting more touches but staying out of trouble. Scotty, is he finally, as a senior, do you think that he's finally going to grow and be able to be utilized by this offense?
You know, I think getting back on scholarships, obviously, like, that's a big step forward in, you know, seeing some of the maturity and the progress that the prior coaching staff wanted to see. And obviously, when Sam Pittman and his new coaching staff got here, they still had some requirements for TJ in order for him to get back on scholarship. And Sam Pittman said on that Zoom call on Wednesday that, you know, he earned the right to get his scholarship back. And, you know, TJ Hammonds has been a guy that, you know, you go back to 2017, he had a really impressive couple week stretch, you know, where he rushed for 84 yards at Ole Miss in the last game that Arkansas's won in SEC play, which, think about that. That was so long ago, right? Like 2017, October 2017, TJ Hammonds was a big part of that game. Like, he rushed for 84 yards at Ole Miss and, you know, helped Arkansas come back from, what was it, a 31-7 deficit in Oxford. And then the next week he had almost 180 all-purpose yards and 2 touchdowns against Coastal Carolina in what could have been like just a monumental, catastrophic, whatever adjective you want to use, loss. But he went off that day against Coastal Carolina. So it was, he had heightened expectations a little bit after that season. And in 2018, he played in four games, didn't play after the fifth game, and because he had to, I think he underwent in-season knee surgery that year. And then prior to spring practice in 2019, Chad Morris announced that TJ Hammonds wasn't with the team and wasn't going to be with the team for spring drills due to an academic issue. The Arkansas Democrat Gazette reported that. TJ then rejoined the team, you know, just a few months later in May. And then going into that fall in 2019, he didn't play in the first four games. I believe it was still like his suspension was a little bit, was academics related. And then last year, you know, he played in five games, was on the field for 47 plays, according to Pro Football Focus. Just didn't really have a whole lot of an impact last year. So just for his sake, hopeful that, you know, he can stay on the right track and remain on the right track, because, I mean, God, dude, like, we know his athletic ability is off the charts. Like, he's just, and Sam Pittman said it. He said he's fast. He's got a lot of speed. You can beat people two ways as far as physically. You can beat them with speed, or you can beat them with bigness. I love that he used the word bigness. He said you can beat them with large humans, but right now it's a little bit easier for Arkansas to get fast guys right now than it is to get a whole team full of big guys. And TJ Hammonds is a fast guy. So I think having an athlete the caliber of TJ Hammonds back, you know, in the fold, is going to be a positive. And I mean, you think about that running back room now. You got Rakeem Boyd, who's obviously, he's the leader of that room. He could have left after his junior year, decided to come back because, you know, and Sam Pittman even talked about that a little bit on that Zoom call, like, what can Rakeem Boyd do to continue to grow as a running back? He's got to be able to catch a little, he's got to continue to show NFL minds that he can catch out of the backfield. And God, we saw tons of swing passes out of the backfield under Chad Morris. So, and Sam Pittman said that they're going to give him plenty of opportunities to continue to do that. And he's got to get a little bit more physical, and he's got to get a little bit stronger and become a better pass protector. So those are two things that Rakeem Boyd's got to work on to continue to grow as a back. And then you look at a guy like Traylon Smith and the transfer from Arizona State. You know, Rakeem Boyd and Traylon Smith have been working out together quite a bit. So those two guys look to be like a pretty good 1-2 punch. Like, we haven't really seen Traylon Smith in like a live scrimmage situation, but like the reports from Chad Morris and players on the staff when he was on the scout team, he was giving Arkansas some pretty good looks. He was giving first team defense some problems. So it's pretty exciting. And then you throw in a guy like TJ Hammonds, you got to feel pretty good about where your running backs room is right now.
You definitely do. That's one of the few spots. Well, I would say the running backs and even the wide receivers that you feel like you have some depth at now after the recruiting class. The cupboard is not bare for Sam Pittman and his staff. It's just another one of those things of, we haven't been able to see them this year, so we don't necessarily know how the Kendall Briles offense is going to look. But it's not just going to be a huge transition like it was from Brett Bielema to Chad Morris, just two completely different offenses. Even though Sam Pittman is an offensive line coach, he is going to keep, with hiring Kendall Briles, they are going to keep the same type of offense. And then they also have Dominique Johnson, the freshman, coming in. They can compete for snaps as well. I never thought I'd really say this, Scotty, but I'm about ready for fall camp to start kicking off, just to give us something to watch, possibly, if we're allowed to even go in. When fall camp kicked off last August, it was a whirlwind. And that was when I was, one of the first things I did after I was hired here at Whole Hog. And I was like, this is awesome and a lot and not, it's just crazy. Now I'm ready for the craziness. I've sat still for way too long. Some other roster notable news: Catrell Wallace from Bryant is no longer on the Arkansas Razorback team. From what Sam Pittman said, that he thought that he would go to junior college, but he didn't necessarily know. Wallace, as I said, was from Bryant. He was arrested on February 24th by the Benton Police Department in connection with a second-degree sexual assault, Class B felony, tampering, a Class D felony, and that is all according to the Saline County Sheriff's Office website. So he's had a little bit of trouble. The investigation is still ongoing, so we're not for sure how that is all going to turn out, but we know for sure that he will not be on the Razorbacks roster moving forward. Well, that should wrap up our football talk here on the Whole Hog Podcast. Scotty and I were able to interview Jalen Barford as we're going to transition now into some basketball talk. We interviewed him earlier this week, and so we're going to let y'all listen to that right here. It was a great interview, very insightful. I do want to mention that this was recorded earlier, probably last week. So kind of the racial tension stuff and the protest stuff was not a big topic at the time, or else Scotty and I would have probably asked Jalen about that. So we did not ask Jalen about those things, mainly because they were not happening at the time of this recording. But we're going to relive some memories. So if you, if you're a hurt Arkansas Razorback fan, or grab the tissues, there's going to be a North Carolina game mentioned in there once and twice. But there's also some good memories in there. He talks about the guys that he got to play with, what he's doing now, and one of his favorite games, which was an overtime thriller at Bud Walton Arena. So take a listen. Now on the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America, we are joined by former Arkansas guard Jalen Barford. Jalen, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Thanks for having me.
And so I guess the perfect place to start is, well, what are you doing right now with all of this coronavirus stuff?
Right now, really just trying to stay in shape, trying to get in the gym as much as possible. Really just taking it one day at a time, trying to stay top tier, of course.
I guess what kind of things are you doing to stay in shape right now?
Really the basics, push-ups, sit-ups, run a little bit here and there. But when I get in the gym, of course, lift and do the strength and conditioning stuff, basketball aspect, just shooting and doing my regular workout routine.
No, I saw a video on your Instagram the other day. I think you were doing a dribbling drill, I think at half court in some gym. It looks like your handle's pretty tight.
Yeah, definitely trying to keep it tight because of the quarantine that's going on, because I was in Italy.
Right.
And I kind of quarantined there. I was off for probably like 2 weeks. And then I get home, I had to quarantine again. So it was kind of crazy. Stuff been locked down. So
yeah,
just trying to stay in shape as much as possible.
There's a lot of news coming out of Italy. That was one of the harder hit areas for the coronavirus. Have you heard any news about when they might try and resume playing some sports there?
I think sometime last month they went on and canceled the rest of the season where our season. I know for sure. But I haven't heard too much now. I think they open up things slowly, but I'm pretty sure they'll probably start back maybe September, October.
Yeah, that would be a good deal for you. I'm curious, just talking about Italy for a minute. You grew up in Tennessee. Italy's a little bit different than Tennessee. I guess, what was it like living there, and what was it like playing there? Like, what did you like about it, and what was kind of challenging for you?
I liked it. It was great. It was great weather. The part I was in, Pesaro, and I played in Rome too, so it was nice. The level of play was good. I had some of the good stars over there. The old people that played in the NBA. It was very nice. Physical league, defensive. They harp on defense a lot, to help defense and stuff like that. So it was a very physical league to play in. And just the scenery was nice, especially from Tennessee. It was crazy. I stayed on the beach too. So.
Oh, nice.
It was really nice.
Yeah, that doesn't sound too bad. When you go to a different country to play sport, you don't necessarily have to speak the same language on the basketball court, but in everyday life, it might be kind of hard to get around if you don't speak Italian. What has that transition been like for you?
That transition is kind of hard, a little bit, but some people down there, they speak English, I guess, because the world changed a little bit, so I got to be able to speak English. But
right.
I mean, it was pretty decent just to, it wasn't so bad like I thought it would, but it was pretty cool though.
So have you been working on your Italian as well?
I know the basics. I don't try to get all into that at this point. I need more time to get out of there. I know the basics.
So what was your favorite part about living over there? Was it just I guess it was the view from your place?
I would say probably, waking up every morning, just going to stand on the balcony, enjoy the breeze, you know, to be thankful to be able to be in a different country.
That's awesome.
Yeah, for sure. So going from your professional days, I'm going to take you way back to your college days. When you're whenever you're coming out of Jackson, Tennessee, and you're looking at colleges, what made you decide to go the junior college route?
First off, my grades. Secondly, just the, you know, junior college, it helped me a lot. You know, it helped me grow as a man. Helped me see things differently in life. It just taught me a lot. You know, when I first went in, I was probably the youngest on the team because everybody was older. It was like, you know, everybody had a different background. You know, it was just the way you meet up with players and enjoy your time with them and, you know, like, run with them and play with them. I actually gained some good friends from junior college, so it was nice for me.
I know a lot of guys, after they leave junior college, or maybe even while they're at junior college, they say that that junior college lifestyle is not for everybody. You know, it kind of builds you. Can you attest to that? What was your junior college experience like?
Oh yeah, definitely. Some people, junior college is not made for soft people. I would say, because you know you gotta be mentally strong and just get through it every day. Especially if you have stayed 2 years in college, in junior college, so. It's tough some nights, some days. You got to figure out how to get through it. You know, if you've been through things in your life, you can get through that with no problem, honestly.
What was helping you, you know, push through those junior college years? What was kind of motivating you?
Just being able to be successful, you know, coming out of my city, Jackson, Tennessee. There's not too many people that make it out doing what they do or doing what they love to do. Something always happens. You know, to be incarcerated or just, you know, maybe get killed or something, you know, God forbid. But, you know, just got to just push through the 2 years. Yeah, and then plus I had my daughter on the way. And then my grandma had died when I was in junior college. So it was just a lot of things that pushed me to get through that. And it just helped me out a lot.
During your time at Whitlow Junior College, you really transformed in some recruiting rankings. You were the number one junior college transfer coming out whenever you were finished. What changed in your game from high school to junior college that you were able to elevate your play?
I think I would say just getting more stronger, being able to shoot better. And just being an all-around player, you know, my freshman year, I couldn't, you know, shoot that well. Sophomore year, did a little better. And it opened my game up a lot more than I thought it would. You know, people started having to go over screens on me instead of going under. It just helped me out a lot. You know, I seen a lot of defenses every night. But, I mean, I still withstood the battles that I went through as a junior college.
And then, when you are ranked the number one prospect, who is recruiting you?
It was everybody, really. I was had of course Arkansas, Ole Miss, really everybody in the SEC. Had Xavier, Creighton, Louisville. I had some great schools in them when I was junior college.
Why did you choose Arkansas?
When I went on my visit. It was nice. It was real nice. I liked it. I loved it. Down south, of course, and Coach A and the staff, they had a very base family-based coaching staff, and they never stopped recruiting me out the high school, honestly, because they recruited me in high school too, so they always stayed in contact with me.
Yeah, Jalen, I'm curious what that connection and that bond with Coach Anderson and the staff was like, what, you know, how they connected with you, and I guess just could you maybe detail that a little bit?
It's a great bond between us, really all four of us, Coach A, Coach Cleveland, Coach Thurman, and Coach Watkins. You know, they took me as a family member, honestly, especially Coach A and Coach Cleveland. You know, we all still talk to this day. You know, we got a special bond. Even I tell people all the time, like, I used to go see Coach Anderson in the office, and we never talked about basketball. It was just life lessons. and just, you know, stealing the stuff that he wanted to steal, you know. He helped me be a better man as well, you know. So he was there for, me a lot, especially my mama got cancer. You know, I think he got even closer with that. So they just helped me a lot. You know, they always got a special place in my heart. I know they always got one for me too, so.
When you think about your time at the University of Arkansas, you have had success, and really success that Arkansas hasn't seen since, with you and Daryl Macon and just the entire teams from your first year in 2016 all the way until you left. What are some things that stick out in your mind about your time at Arkansas?
I always tell people that's the best years of my life, honestly. They always said college is your best year, so I'm gonna vouch for that because it was some great times I had with my teammates. You know, it was just fun on and off the court. You know, I got a chance to play with some great players. We made a lot of history together. You know, Dusty, Darren, Anton, Moses, Trey. It was fun though. You know, we had a great team both years. I think my first year we should have made a deep run, at least the Elite Eight. And especially my senior, you know, we went out, but you know, stuff happens. But we made success those 2 years that I was there.
All right, so I gotta ask you about it. You just mentioned your first year that you were here, and you talked about the deeper run. That's a painful point.
That's a touchy subject
for a lot of Arkansas Razorback fans as well. What were your thoughts and I guess reactions during that North Carolina game?
You know, I actually didn't know what happened during that game, so I really didn't know about what people were talking about. So I was doing the video. Like, I just seen a video maybe a month or two ago, they had a reunion about it or something like that, but I didn't know that it happened like that. We definitely got cheated. If something should have been called, at least a charge or something, a blocking foul, so we can get, at least get a shot of defensive possession back. But, you know, stuff happens, you know. Maybe we won that game, we probably would have won the whole tournament, so we don't know. So.
Right, because North Carolina went on to either win it or go to the championship game.
Yeah, I think they won it.
They went on to win it that year. They won that year.
Which is just crazy. When you're going through, a lot of people want to talk about the very end of that game because it was so controversial. But if you think about it, in the first half, Arkansas, y'all are down double digits, I think almost 20 down. Points.
It was down 20 for sure at one point. You know, we always had a thing of spotting people 20 points, 15, 20 points, and then come back and win. So
was there ever, was there ever any doubt in the team when you're playing this number one ranked team and you're in down by 20 points in the first half?
Oh, no, never a doubt. Well, I'm telling you, like, it's just something we had within us that just bring us back, or, you know, coach had give us a talk. We had just come back, get in 41 and come back. You know, we just knew that was going to happen anyway, but we didn't know how it was going to end. You know what I'm saying? We didn't know how it was going to end.
Yeah, you knew there was a good chance that you guys might be able to claw back in the game with you, Daryl, and Dusty and Moses on that team. That was, I mean, just thinking about that squad, is it kind of crazy to think that you four guys were on the floor together?
I mean, the team we had was very loaded. You know, I've been with Anton and Daryl all this week, actually. So we just have been talking about, like, times at Arkansas, the team we had. I feel like that was one of the most stacked teams that maybe Arkansas had in this era, like right now. So we were very loaded. You can't forget about Manny. You know, Manny, he was a good guy. He kept us together. Of course, Echelon, he was the next in line. Then you had BT. Yeah, him too. Yeah, Orlando Cook. So we had a great team. We had the right pieces. Yeah, even our freshmen that came in, Adriel Bailey and C.J. Jones.
Yep.
You know, they helped us a lot too. People didn't know that, but you know, we had a great team, 1 through 12.
And then you go 1 year forward, and the team looks similar. You've lost a few pieces for sure, but you get to add a dynamic guy like Daniel Gafford. What was it like playing with him?
Oh, it was great. You know, his first few weeks, he struggled a little bit because he wasn't that physical. But once he got the hang of the physicality of how to play in the SEC, Daniel, he didn't look back. You know, he caught every lob, blocked every shot. We used to get on bow down blocking shots. You just too tall not to block shots. So when he realized, like, he had to play that physical and that killer mentality on the court, like, he never looked back for sure. So definitely Daniel Gafford's probably one of the best big men that went through Arkansas.
And then you get a unique opportunity during that year that you're playing with Daniel Gafford. You go out to Oregon. You get to be one of two teams from the SEC selected to play in the PK80. And then y'all start routing teams. You route UConn, and you beat Trey Young in Oklahoma. What was that experience like?
PK80 was a great experience, especially to start the year off. You know, I think UConn was right there at the beginning, you know, to give us that confidence to beat them. Oklahoma, too. You know, they was highly touted that year, too, as well, with Trey Young. But just to go out and beat them two teams, you know, we just felt like we were on a mission. It had to be done, so it was great.
You know, you're a big Damian Lillard guy, and so you got to go out to Portland and play in his house, and then you show out a little bit, and then you get a shout-out from him. Do you remember? What do you remember about that?
Yeah, I definitely remember that. You know, that's one of my my favorite players in the league. So, and I kind of modeled my game after him a little bit, just being able to have a big body, jump guard, to get to the rim, can shoot deep, play defense, you know. So I really like Damian Lillard. You know, it was a special moment for me to get a shout out. He even noticed that. So, and he's a real genuine guy too, though. So. Real good dude.
So, sticking with your time at Arkansas, what would you say were your high points and maybe a low point during your time here?
Say that one more time, please.
Yeah, just a high point for you at Arkansas and then maybe a low point for you.
One of my high points? Like
yeah, just one of the things that stands out to you the most.
Like a game or anything? You
know, just anything.
I would say Tennessee game at home in Budweiser.
That was
probably one of the best.
That was crazy.
One of the best games ever. Like, I feel like it can be like right behind the dunk game by Michael Paul. It's probably behind that. Ain't nothing gonna ever beat that. But that's like top three game ever in Razorback history, I think.
Yeah, y'all started off that overtime hot against Tennessee.
Yeah hot.
I don't think I'd ever heard Bud Walton that loud until like the Kentucky game this past season. I mean, you guys just came out. You guys came out just with a flamethrower in overtime. Y'all had Bud Walton hot that day.
But I don't think people realize like how the game went, because we was down the whole game, and we I think it was like 3 minutes left. We was down maybe 10 or 12. We came back, so that's what made me like. That's when they realized we was probably one of the better teams in the country, the way we come back and just be poised. And we were very experienced, too. So we've been there before. And that was a young team at the time. So I think that's one of the best games ever in Razorback history to me.
Then flashing. Yeah, for sure. And then flashing forward to this season with the Razorbacks, they have a new head coach in Eric Musselman. Have you kept up with the results from the previous season?
Oh, yeah. I watched, you know, I was on different time zones. So, you know, I was up probably like 4 in the morning watching them play. So it was good, you know, it was worth watching. You know, I like the way he played the guys or coaching them. I like his style of play. He's doing a good job right now. I mean, I see he brought in a lot of recruits. So that's a plus, especially like in-state. So that's always a plus. So I think he'll be a great success for them. You know, I see he got a couple transfers coming in, so we just gonna see. We gotta see where he goes from there.
Yeah, I'm curious your thoughts on the season that Mason Jones had. You know, he also, I think he declared for the draft in late March. Do you have any advice for a guy like Mason who's preparing right now for a pro career?
He had one hell of a season. I can say that for sure. Like, that was a great season by him. You know, watching him developed, because I watched him come in before we had left. And, you know, he was kind of chubby, so to see him like lose weight and work on his game and improve, you know, the advice I got from him, just keep pushing, you know, just keep having that killer mentality, just go out there thinking nobody can guard you or stop you. Simple.
I think after your first year at Arkansas, you declared for the draft and you got some feedback. How valuable was that feedback that you were getting, you know, from the advisory board, just from some NBA teams? How valuable was that for you?
The feedback was good. You know, I took the feedback and, you know, went to work on my game. You know, they wanted to see me shoot the ball better. Because my first year, I was shooting 28%. And then second year, I come out shooting like 43%, 44%.
Yeah, you made a big jump.
So it was definitely a big jump, you know. People was wondering how that happened, you know. Just took the time and worked on the gym in the center. Me and Coach Cleveland, even on off days, going to the gym and work on my game. So.
When you're getting that feedback, how important is that for you? And if you put yourself in the shoes of a guy like, say, Isaiah Joe, who's on the Razorbacks right now, who put his name in and wanted that feedback, but also isn't necessarily getting to go through all the stuff that you got to go through because of the coronavirus.
I would say staying patient, you know, just to keep working on your game, though, because, you know your weaknesses deep down. You just want to see what other people say, but just keep working on your game and stay patient. You know, it's going to come, sure. But Isaiah Joe, he's had a great career in Arkansas right now. And he coming back, right? Or he kept his name in the draft.
Yeah, so he's declared for the draft, but he hasn't signed an agent yet. And they've also pushed back the withdrawal date, so that's still TBA right now. So I guess everything's still kind of up in the air.
Okay. I got you. See, so just, you know, he just got to keep working on his game. It's just a waiting process for everybody, really. Even with me, in my situation right now, I'm still waiting on team, you know, to figure out what I'm going to do for next year. Still have to get, you know, have a season. And everybody's just waiting right now.
Right. Listen, I know one of your first stops was in Greensboro with the Swarm. Could you kind of maybe tell us what that time of your life was like with the Greensboro Swarm?
Greensboro was nice. You know, it was a good situation. I got a chance to be able to play, actually. You know, some people don't get to play in the GB because of the call downs and call-ups that happen in the GB. So I was able to play. You know, I averaged like, I think I averaged like maybe 19 points something, around up to 20, like 4 rebounds, 5 rebounds, 2 assists. So I had a solid year. I was leading scorer on my team, so it was cool.
Jalen, you have experience in the G League and overseas. Shoot me straight here for a guy that's not very familiar with the Italian leagues, or really a whole lot of leagues that are overseas. What is the talent compared to over in Europe compared to, let's say, the G League?
I would say in Europe, it's more experienced players have been over there for years. Like, you know, maybe 10 plus years players over there. So it's just more physical, I would say. And you have to play defense. Like, if not, you're going to get blown out in 3 games. So it's just more experienced players over there, you know, that have been in there for years, that know the system, that know the country. And just know the team, you know, how they coach them to play. So it's way different, I would say. And it's more like college. You can pack the lane. So people key in on defense way more. You know, G League is just like the NBA. You just space out. You know, it'd be 100-some points played or a score in the game. But overseas, it's like maybe 50 to 60.
Wow. I know you mentioned that you were having a pretty good year, you know, in that 1 year with the Swarm. And I remember every now and then, I think I would look at the G League Twitter account and they would put up highlights of, you know, a game where you blew up. I'm curious, how close did you feel that you were to getting a call up?
I think I was very close. It was a stretch where I averaged like 29. Like, I think like 4 games, I averaged like 29. And then I was at practice and sprained my ankle. So it was like, I was like, damn. I was like out for like 2 weeks, and that was like close to the end of the season. So it was kind of tough for me even bounce back from that. I was sprained ankle. I was trying to, but I couldn't like I wanted to. And my ankle just not getting back right like I wanted to now. So it was just, I think it's all in God's plan. You know, it might have not been for me to get a call up at that point in time of life. So I just kept pushing and kept working.
So playing for the Greensboro Hornets, which is in the Charlotte Hornets organization, I guess is one way to say that. Michael Jordan owns the Charlotte Hornets, and The Last Dance has been pretty popular all around. I was curious if you ever got to meet Jordan.
No, I didn't get to meet him. You know, He wasn't there when we was during training camp like that. And preseason, he definitely wasn't there. So I didn't get to see him or meet him. But they said he kind of be like, he kind of mean sometimes. But I don't know, though. One of my teammates, he was a two-way, and he played with us most of the time. He said he got a chance to meet him. So it's pretty cool.
That is really cool. Jalen, we appreciate your time here on the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America. Great insight, getting to relive some of those glory days from the Arkansas Razorback basketball program. Best of luck to you, man.
All right, thanks for having me.
Yeah, appreciate it, Jalen.
Thanks, Jalen.
Yes, sir.
Once again, thank you to Jalen Barford for joining us here on Whole Hog Radio in the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America. All right, Scotty, as we transition to some basketball talk here, Chris Crutchfield has made the news this week as he is leaving the University of Arkansas to go be a head coach at D2, and it's a pretty cool opportunity for him as he gets to coach some of his family members.
Yeah, and like if you've followed Arkansas basketball, you know, over the last decade, it's been really, really rare to see assistant coach movement on Arkansas's basketball staffs. Matt did a lot of research after we found out that Crutchfield was going to East Central Oklahoma, or East Central University in Ada, Oklahoma. Crutchfield, I believe, is, according to Matt's research, yeah, so Crutchfield is the first, he was the second on-court hire that Musselman made last May. So he spent a little bit over a year at Arkansas, and he's the first Arkansas assistant coach, according to Matt's research, to be hired as a college head coach since Ronnie Thompson was hired at Ball State in 2006. So it's been almost 15 years since an Arkansas assistant coach got, you know, took another job, and it was a head coaching job. So that's pretty interesting. The first full day that Chris Crutchfield was on was the head coach at East Central. He got a couple of commitments from a couple of his sons. So that's going to be a pretty neat deal. Crutchfield, you know, I talked to Eric Musselman a while back for that when I was hired series, and I asked him about Chris Crutchfield, and he was complimentary of the way that Crutchfield, you know, he was a big part in Arkansas establishing a footprint in recruiting in Texas and Oklahoma. And he spoke highly of Crutchfield, said, you know, he was very well liked on the recruiting trail. And I think Arkansas might miss his recruiting touch. So it's obviously you like to see guys who are assistant coaches go on to take head coaching jobs. I think it's worth noting that before Chris Crutchfield came to Arkansas, he coached college basketball for 12 straight seasons in Oklahoma. So Oklahoma is obviously a place that, you know, he and his family really like. And so best of luck to Chris Crutchfield. And now I guess we have to see who Eric Musselman is going to put in Chris Crutchfield's place. We were kind of throwing around a few ideas on the message board, and I know me and Matt were texting back and forth. We've kind of got some ideas who might step on the staff. I wouldn't be shocked if Anthony Ruta, who has been an assistant on Eric Musselman's staff before at Nevada, I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if he stepped into an on-court role. He was off the floor last season. Obviously, like, he was on the bench, but he wasn't like one of the assistant coaches. He was director of basketball operations. So that's obviously a possibility. Like I said, he's got some experience as an assistant under Eric Musselman, but I guess we'll see what's happening with that. But just best of luck to Chris Crutchfield. He I really enjoyed the conversation I had with him. I talked to all of the assistant coaches last Halloween, and Chris Crutchfield, when I walked in to interview him, Clay Moser, and Corey Williams, Chris Crutchfield was the only coach that wasn't in the office at the time. And when I finished up with Corey Williams, who I think was my second interview, Chris Crutchfield came in, and he was fresh off of a recruiting trip at the time, I think. So, just it's a little bit out of the ordinary to see assistant coaches with Arkansas basketball leaving over the past, obviously, 10 or 15 years. But I think anytime you can take a head coaching job, I think he's just wanting to further his career. And he obviously, he said, my family and I are looking forward to a successful work-life balance at East Central.
Yeah, for sure. As you said, that's a place that he's very familiar with in Oklahoma. To go back and be able to coach your sons has got to be a pretty cool opportunity as well. Now, something else to think about as well is that there's a hiring freeze at the university because of COVID-19, and the funds that are there are not there, really. So there won't be an official word, at least for a little bit, on Musselman and who he hires as an assistant coach, which could very well play into the factor of maybe him hiring a guy like Ruta, who is already there in the building. All right, one last thing to wrap it up here on the Whole Hog Podcast. And Scotty got a fantastic interview with kind of the brains behind some of the more creative stuff that the University of Arkansas basketball program does, and that is Pat Ackerman. Scotty, really interesting story on the website. What did you learn from Pat?
Yeah, I learned that Pat Ackerman, he's the Arkansas recruiting coordinator. He told me, I think you were in the room, we were in the podcast room when we were in there together when Pat called and you sat in on some of it. He said, not to be confused with the director of recruiting. That's Michael Musselman's job. So he wanted to make sure we didn't get those titles mixed up. But, you know, when the season ended in March, the season ended abruptly in Nashville. Arkansas was at the SEC tournament. A few days later, Eric Musselman is, you know, that viral video of him coaching in the empty basketball performance gym, like the men's gym and the basketball performance center. You know, obviously that was kind of a topic of discussion because that video went absolutely nuts on social media, went viral, got picked up by like ESPN Sports Center. And so when we got to talk to Eric Musselman on a teleconference shortly after that, you know, we asked for, you know, kind of the inspiration behind that video, and Eric Musselman credited Pat Ackerman for it. And, you know, I learned, you know, just through reporting this story, I talked to his dad, Tom Ackerman, who coached college basketball for more than 20 years, most notably at Mansfield University in Pennsylvania. I learned that Pat has always kind of had an imagination, and he, you know, I asked for like a specific example of that creativity, that imagination that he was talking about. And Tom Ackerman told me a story about Pat winning a Sports Illustrated for Kids contest when he was growing up. The contest called for submissions for the best prank that you pulled that didn't get you in any kind of trouble. And Tom said that Pat was all over it. He said, quote, basically what he and a buddy did was tape a walkie-talkie to a remote control car and followed people around with it. They were videotaping the whole thing, and he ended up winning. And so for winning that contest, Tom Ackerman told me that a BMX bicycle team came to their town and put on an exhibition for Pat and his friends. He got a bike and a couple other things. Tom just told me that, you know, Pat's imagination has always been really fertile. He's always had that creative side to him. And if you look at his bio on Arkansas's website, it says that, you know, his creativity and his savvy with like graphics and presentations for like when recruits come on visits, that's kind of a highlight for him. It's also unique because the story is also kind of unique because Pat played basketball in college. Like he, when he was in high school, he transferred to, I think it's Worcester Academy, and in the Northeast. And Pat said that his recruiting kind of took off there. He got serious about the game. He ended up going to Penn State out of that prep school, and then after a couple of seasons, went to Detroit Mercy, and played 1 year at Detroit Mercy, and then he wasn't able to play his senior year because of some injuries that arose during I think during his junior year. So that year away from the game, when he didn't play his senior year at Detroit Mercy, that year he said was one of the longest, hardest years of his life, just because he just wasn't around the guys. Like it's kind of tough to just cut it off cold turkey. Like I couldn't even imagine that. But he said in that year, he really found out that basketball was what he wanted to, what he wanted to do with his life. And, you know, he's always, he grew up in a basketball family. Like I said, Tom Ackerman told me that Gretchen Ackerman, who's, Pat's mom, likes to tell the story about her showing up to Tom's basketball camps when she was pregnant with Pat. And Tom said that Gretchen swears that even then she could feel Pat bouncing in her stomach as she answered, as she walked into gyms. And so just pretty neat. He's got a really, he got a great basketball background. And, you know, if you want to read this story, it kind of tells, you know, how Pat Ackerman got hooked up with Eric Musselman, and, you know, what the day to day is like now at Arkansas. Even with the changes that are going on right now with COVID-19, you know, they're doing a lot of virtual tours. You know, right, he said right now the way it goes is they'll get in the office early afternoon, try to do some virtual tours with recruits until late afternoon and early evening, and then they'll get out of there. The next morning Pat will get into the office. He'll take care of some stuff before Eric Musselman gets in. And then once Musk gets there, the staff meets for, you know, anywhere from 10 to 15 minutes to an hour, just kind of depending on, you know, what's all taken place since the last time they got together. I think it was a pretty neat story. It's also, he might be the tallest recruiting coordinator in the country. I would guess he's close to 7 feet tall. I think it was, if you have the time, just go check out that story. Pat's got a pretty cool background, and I think you'll like how he kind of got hooked up with Eric Musselman at Nevada in the first place as a graduate assistant.
Yeah, good stuff, Scotty. All that is on the Whole Hog Sports website, or you can check for the link in the description if you're on a normal podcasting app, like the Apple Podcast app or a different one. You can just click on the cover art, and that should take you to the description as well. There's lots of notes in there and links to other stories. Some information that we are getting as well during the podcast that we want to set out to you is that the NBA has set an August 25th draft lottery, an October 15th draft. We do not know when, according to sources and according to Adrian Wojnarowski, good old Woj, getting us in on a Woj. Oh, we got a Woj bomb in.
A live Woj bomb.
A live Woj bomb in on the podcast. But we do not know when that is going to mean that players need to withdraw their name from, aka Isaiah Joe. But we do know that the NBA has finally set a date, and we may be getting just a little bit closer to sports coming back, Scotty. The reports have been this week that the NBA is going to come back, and then that also soccer's figuring it out. Now if they could just get baseball on the same page, then we could have all of our sports back. All right, Scotty. I think that'll do it for us here on today's edition of the Whole Hog Podcast. And thank you for joining us. Thanks, Jalen Barford, for joining us as well. And you can check out all of the great content from Scotty, from our great staff of reporters on wholehogsports.com. And just a quick reminder that due to some transitioning period stuff, that we will not have a podcast next week, but we should be on the week after that, unless technical difficulties arise, which, you know, nothing's going as planned so far, so we'll just see. All right, for Scotty Bordelon, our entire Whole Hog Sports staff, I am Seth Campbell, saying so long. Thanks for joining us.